This is 1A. I'm Celeste Headlee in Washington, sitting in for Jen White. The FX TV series Pose follows a community of Black and Latinx queer folks who are negotiating identity, violence against their community, and the rise of HIV and AIDS in the late 1980s and the 1990s. The setting is New York City, but the stage is a glittering ballroom where characters strut and slay in drag. The show is entering its third and final season, and it remains revolutionary, a space for Black and Latinx trans characters and actors on screen.
I used to take that mic in my hands.
The category is...
And it made me feel...
alive.
Your life matters.
Love it. Love it. Pose carved out a space for queer people of color in Hollywood and in a scripted drama, not reality TV. The end of the series begs the question, what is next? Joining us now is one of the stars of Pose. Actress Angelica Ross plays the character Candy on the show. She's also the founder and CEO of Trans Tech. It's a social enterprise that provides education and support for transgender people seeking to enter the tech field. And I can't decide which of your professions has more impact, Angelica. It is so great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
There has never been a show like Pose, possibly ever, that gives not only this much attention to the experiences of trans women of color in particular, but the challenges as well, so much employment for actresses and actors who are trans and of color. What has it been like for you?
You know, it's been a roller coaster ride. Pose is one of those shows that just beautifully is able to show not just for trans people, but hopefully everybody who's able to, who are fans of Pose and who watch the show, can sort of see the reflections of life and the challenges of life, that it all is just not all roses. And sometimes things get really, really scary and really, really difficult. But we can learn so much from those who are in the margins, who deal with difficulty on a daily basis, and not just as a bad moment or a bad day. They have to live their lives through these very challenging environments. And for me, it was just, you know, as many people call it, like, it was a love letter really to our community to finally, I think, explain to audiences a side of the story that hasn't always been seen. I think most depictions of trans life and narratives have been very superficial, have been very much about putting on their gender and their makeup and a wardrobe and as if it's a disguise. But what you get to see with Pose is that trans people are some of the most authentic people you'll ever meet.
Now, I'm sure you are very practiced at this, but just so you know, I am ready to jump in and talk over you before you reveal any spoilers about what happens to your character or anybody else. But I want to play this little clip. Here is you as Candy standing up to Pray Tell, a character played by Billy Porter, and this is from one of the ballroom scenes.
You stood up there on your perch talking about it's our time to be seen. To show the world what we got.
That's right.
That's right. But in this room, you the only one that refused to see that I got something to contribute. I got heart. I got talent. I'm a star just like Madonna.
What is this tension that Pose exposes within the trans community, within this the ballroom community?
You know, it's all layered, you know, it's so layered. And I think that Pose sort of starts to depict the sort of politics that happen even within the ballroom, you know, and these sort of categories and standards. And you realize that sometimes when you are a part of a marginalized or oppressed community, some folks learn to adopt the tools of the oppressor in order to sort of find their sense, their place above the rest, or separating themselves from the rest. And so, you know, just like I was explaining in another interview, you know, Krista LaBeija created, you know, this ballroom space when a lot of the white drag queens or queens would not give space to the people, the black and brown queens. And so they created this space where the black and brown queens could live in their fullness. But what they ended up doing was sort of even duplicating some of the oppressive dynamics of what was real. You know, even now today, you know, the ballroom community has been challenged to ask that question of how sort of oppressive that category or that essence could have been to trans women who don't quote unquote pass, you know, in society, or who are not able to give that realness and don't win those categories. Or, you know, characters like Candy, who are dark skinned, weren't really allowed to walk face categories in the beginning, you know, because they didn't really consider dark skinned girls to be pretty enough to walk face category. So there just are various dynamics within the ballroom community. And so Candy stood up and said, listen, I know what you're saying about the world out there. You know, we talk about this all the time, but in this room, you the only one that refused to see that I got talent. And sometimes that just is the case where, you know, even in within our black and brown communities, you know, when it comes to LGBTQ actors, sometimes our award shows and our organizations that are meant to uplift black and brown people refuse to see the talent within our community.
You mentioned Crystal LaBeija. Just FYI for our listeners, Crystal was a black trans woman in New York who founded the House of LaBeija in the 1970s. One of the things, the categories that you're talking about, and one of these tensions that I feel like pose helped me to understand in the smallest way possible for somebody like me is this idea of body image. And there's all these implications for Candy's performances in the ballroom and how she's treated by other ballroom patrons. And I wonder if you could talk about this battle with body for a trans person and whether that's something that you could relate to in your own journey.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because the girls, we all kind of talk amongst ourselves just how we're all gagging, because what the girls would say is that we can't tell the difference between the film queens and the you know, the cis women, in the sense that you know, a lot of the trans girls, we, especially in the past, a lot of the girls had a lot of body, would definitely do like a lot of hips and just create dynamics really for survival, so that they could quote unquote pass in society and so wouldn't immediately be clocked.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but you've talked about passing before, and as a multiracial person myself, when I think of passing, I think of somebody passing for white. In the trans community, mm-hmm. what does it mean to pass?
So, you know, and we start using different terminology. So since I have this space and platform at this moment, I'll introduce, you know, a term that I think feels more affirming to most folks, in that we say cis assumed, or, you know, cis assumed, you know. So basically what it is that I walk through the world, go to the airport, go to the restrooms, and everyone assumes that I'm not trans. They assume that I'm cis. I remember going on a cruise one time with a bunch of rich people from a lot of corporations, you know, like just a lot of folks were there. And I think in these very privileged spaces, people don't expect trans people to have access to these spaces, let alone a public accommodations. So when a guy is hitting on me, or, you know, and trying to be too forward, and, you know, is already trying to kiss me before I've even had a chance to tell him my name, you know, I'm being assumed to be cis, and you know, sometimes that is a passing privilege where I don't receive a lot of harassment, and sometimes it just sometimes forces me into a situation to have to determine when and where and how much to disclose.
Is that a bad thing? I mean, how does one deal with the feelings you may have over someone not realizing you're trans? Does it make you feel pressure to say, wait, stop assuming I'm cis?
Well, think about it this way. Again, like I said, I'll take that example of me being on this cruise. You know, I met this guy, and he did. He moved in for a kiss, before I could even
tell
him my last name.
Regardless. But yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm getting at is that in a patriarchal society, when men believe that they have some sort of like access to women automatically, it puts, you know, it does put trans people in danger because they put a lot of responsibility on us to have to disclose 50 yards away so that they can steer clear of us versus us having the caution signs to steer clear of violent men. Because here the situation is, I heard someone say once, and it was a black woman on social media, and I wish I could, I knew the handle, but I remember her saying that, like, that there, she hasn't met a man there who is homophobic and not misogynistic, that they are just, they go hand in hand.
We'll be back with more from you and our guest in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Amazon Prime Video with The Underground Railroad. From Academy Award winner Barry Jenkins and based on the Pulitzer Prize winning novel by Colson Whitehead, the new Amazon original The Underground Railroad chronicles Cora Randall, played by newcomer Tuso Mbedu, when she discovers an actual network of trains and tunnels beneath the southern soil. Cora must evade a violent bounty hunter before she can find freedom. The Underground Railroad premieres May 14th on Amazon Prime Video. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Today, it seems like everybody's got a bone to pick with the news. So it happens when somebody stops talking smack and just decides to wage all-out war.
First thing you do in an invasion, you eliminate the communications of the enemy.
And what happens if they win? Visit Stockton, California, for a story about a revolt against the mainstream media that's shaken up a city. From NPR's Invisibilia.
Let's jump back into the conversation with these messages from listeners.
My boyfriend and I have been watching Pose since it started back in 2018, and we've especially appreciated incredibly powerful performances by MJ Rodriguez and Billy Porter. It gave depth and reality to a world that I think is a little bit glossed over by TV shows like RuPaul's Drag Race or Legendary, and made me question my own privilege being gay and not having had to live through the HIV/AIDS epidemic.
I love the show Pose. I've been watching it since the beginning, and I'm going to be sad to see it go. I think it's a great way to understand the culture.
I'm a 74-year-old, plain Jane white woman, straight, and I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed Pose. It has given me insight into people that I never would have known or understood about, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful program. I will miss it.
What do you make of that, Angelica, of Pose, the scripted drama, as kind of, in some ways, an educational tool?
Well, listen, so one of them folks in that audio clip sound like Marge in the middle of America. You know, in my media training, you know, sort of they would say we want to speak to Marge in middle America, you know, and that sounded like we reached her. It sounded like, you know, we reached someone who said they would not have otherwise known anything about, you know, this community. And, you know, at the end of the day, these are voters. At the end of the day, these are people who are parents in school districts. These are people who will end up being able to stand up and advocate for not only their trans children, but their friends and their they'll be able to find, hopefully trans people will be able to find support amongst the fans of Pose.
We're talking to Angelica Ross. She plays Candy on the FX TV series Pose. She's also a businesswoman and an activist. And speaking of activism, what do you think Pose, what role do you think this series will end up playing in this fight for trans rights? I mean, you already mentioned some of these viewers, they're voters.
Yes. One thing that's very clear through media, both scripted and non-scripted, the news, one thing that we are seeing is a sort of documentation of our history that has never happened before. I think it has been in the hands of historians who created the history books that we've then studied in classes. And I'll tell you, history was never my favorite subject because I knew it was lies, just a bunch of lies, you know. So for me, Pose is going to be a part of that legacy that's around authenticity and authentic storytelling, showing that we are and have been, because, you know, there's so many people who want to be like, hey, listen, you guys got to relax. Like, this is all new. This is, we just been hearing about trans. No, 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 no. You have just been hearing about trans. Like, we have been here for a very long time. And Pose brings about the story, you know, and again, in the 80s and the late 90s, but you know, we could go back even further. You know, I'm working on a few projects that I can't really talk about right now, but I'm working on a project in the 60s, you know, telling stories about trans experience. So,
yeah, it's interesting to me, your position telling the stories of those who went before you. And Pose does face some of the things head on. Violence against trans women, the HIV/AIDS epidemic. How did you make it through this? To what extent was this an acting challenge? And to what extent was this asking you to relive the trauma of your elders?
Well, I'll say, I don't think that any of this was about reliving the trauma of our elders. The reason why I don't think that is because it is too fresh. When I was filming it, and I was filming, you know, I won't say what, you know, I was filming some very difficult scenes, you know, there was one scene I was filming where I was talking in a funeral home, and I pulled out a list before we hit set action of all the trans women who had died that year. And we all wept together in that room. And I talked about using this moment as a moment to grieve all the ones that we have lost. But the thing is we don't have to look too far in the past. I can go back to last week, I think.
Oh my God.
You know, with Jahira, the ballroom community lost, you know, just a leader and a mother and a supporter who at the time that she was killed was doing what she does, hosting a family in her house, you know, a couple. And I guess the man ended up killing both her and the spouse that she was hosting.
Murdered.
They were murdered. Yes. So it's not, you know, the thing is that I feel as Candy, I feel as Angelica Ross, actually. I'm a Buddhist. You know, have learned to awaken to every moment of my life. So whether I was working for Apple or working for a nonprofit or on television, I knew that my purpose in that moment was to reveal as much truth as possible so that people could finally feel it.
And we are going to talk more about your involvement in the tech world, because I think that's absolutely super, super cool. Without revealing spoilers, though, in 20 seconds, will Candy be back for season 3?
Yes. She was back on last night's episode, yes.
How did you get into the tech field, Angelica? How did you end up at Apple?
Okay, you want the real story. All right.
Yeah, I always want the real story.
I will clean it up a little bit. But basically, I was working as a waitress. I had been working as a waitress for like 6 years for a couple big, you know, food chains. And I got fired from those jobs. And I had some really dangerous situations happen. I had like a cook expose himself to me behind in the kitchen and try to sexually harass me in the kitchen. And, you know, I just had a lot of harassment on the job until the point where I quit. I was asked to quit, actually. And then when I tried to go to another place, it just kind of the problems. It was in a small town in Roanoke, Virginia. And, you know, the problems just kept following me around. The problem people just kept following me around. So I ended up quitting those jobs. And I heard about an opportunity about this trans woman who came from this small town who created a website, and she quote unquote helped girls to who were, you know, didn't get in jobs, who were unemployed. They could pose on her website and, you know, get money to transition, to pay for your surgeries and to, you know, for your hormones and all this sort of thing. So I initially went to South Florida to kind of join that industry. Mm-hmm. And as I was joining the industry, you know, all the girls kind of looked at me differently. And it was an interesting, funny space to be in. But
why?
Like,
why did they look at you differently?
Well, I just remember as I was starting to make friends with everyone there and just talking or whatever. I remember one of the Sandy, one of the Brazilian trans girls, she said, she was like, mommy, she was like, you're different. She's like, this is only a temporary situation for you. You know, she just, they could see that I was different in that space. I don't know, you know, whatever the vibe I was giving off. And it wasn't like I never separated myself from the other girls. You know, I was always a girl's girl sort of situation. And so the owner of the website actually asked me, instead of posing on the website, asked me if I would run the website because she saw I was computer savvy. Now, I didn't know as much as she thought I knew, but so I went to like YouTube, and at the time it was called lynda.com, and I started teaching myself how to be a webmaster and how to run like an update websites every month, upload photos, do batch, you know, edits to photos, things like that. And after doing that, I ended up sort of expanding my skills to do more of that type of work for, but not for adult websites, for just regular content management systems through WordPress, Joomla, Drupal, all these other things. And I just learned that I could do tech work without people knowing what I looked like. I didn't have to be on the front end, quote unquote. I could be on the back end and, you know, make a living. And so that's from where I created the blueprint for trans tech. Because I realized that technology could be the great equalizer. It could give us opportunity that if we could show and prove that we have the skills, there would be someone out there willing to hire us.
We're talking to Angelica Ross, actress on Pose from FX. We'll be back with more from you and our guest after the break.
This message is sponsored by Norton, publisher of The Premonition by Michael Lewis. In 2019, a panel of public health experts judged the United States to be more prepared than other nations for a pandemic. Where did we go wrong? New from the best-selling author of The Big Short, Moneyball, and The Fifth Risk comes a taut and brilliant nonfiction thriller that pits a band of medical visionaries against a wall of ignorance. The Premonition, a pandemic story by Michael Lewis. Wherever books are sold, from W.W. Norton.
Hi, it's Jen White. From politics to pop culture, 1A is the place for the national conversation on NPR. And our upgraded 1A Vox Pop app is the fastest and easiest way to add your voice. You'll see the latest and get a jump on upcoming stories all at the press of a button. Download the new 1A Vox Pop app for iOS and Android today and make yourself heard loud and clear on 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Let's get back to the conversation. It seems to me that trans tech actually fills a number of gaps that we have in technology right now, not just trans people, but also people of color and also just women.
I have to even just tell you, like, my one of my assistants, my executive assistant actually is a mother and a wife, and she has kids. And you know what's great about how we work remotely? We use a system. I'll give them a little commercial. Hopefully, they'll give me a discount or something. But look, Upwork.com. I go there often to Upwork.com, and I've hired people over the years, but because they have an infrastructure that when you sign up, you log in to clock into your job, and it takes a screenshot of your computer every 10 minutes while you're working. And if you're not doing it that way, that my assistant can add manual time and just add a note about what she was doing. So it gives a lot of accountability and mediation if needed or what have you. But this is now a mother who can be there for her children and be more in their lives while working for me and making sure that, you know, emails are going out and that, you know, documents are being, you know, proofread and all these different things. So for me, TransTech is about transition at the intersections of technology. So folks who are coming out of like years of being incarcerated and now have to figure out how to navigate this highly technical world, or women who have spent their most of their lives being a homemaker and not really investing in another skill, who are now saying, you know what, I want to start a business. So for me, it is the great equalizer, and it's something that can help folks who are not just, you know, white, cis, straight, heterosexual men.
You have talked, though, about the difficulties in launching a company and finding capital for this kind of business investment, for not just a trans-owned business, but a Black trans-owned business. What has it been like for you as an entrepreneur?
You know, I want to tie this to my sister, Patrice Cullors, who is one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, because, you know, it's very interesting. I have experienced some similar side eye that, you know, she has been in the media about the fact with Black Lives Matter and where's the money going and what's happening and, you know, what have you. When the fact is like Black Lives Matter, even just like TransTech, we are now starting to get support. We are now starting to get money come in, and we are putting it immediately to work in all the ways that benefit the community. But I, since 2014, have never taken a salary from TransTech. I have oftentimes gone into debt when building TransTech. And so my rise, my wealth, my well-being has all had to be created outside of TransTech. And so it's one of those things where I've had to oftentimes sell myself just to fund TransTech. I would almost call it like a different kind of prostitution, where I knew certain organizations, they wanted me. They didn't want to, you know, they wanted my time and wanted me to speak about my life or to, you know, do keynote something that had nothing to do with TransTech. So I would do that in lieu of taking a fee and, you know, would pay, you know, into TransTech. So eventually when I was able to create a dynamic, obviously with acting and with, you know, just other things, where I just kept myself afloat while TransTech was getting money. You
Which
know?
Is and so problematic, as we get, right? Because not everyone is a gorgeous actress and entertainer. I mean, no, not everybody is you. Not everybody can afford to not take a salary because their business is not getting the investment
it
needs.
So here's the great lesson here. I was working for a nonprofit. They were paying me like $34,000 a year or whatever to like develop a job development program for trans people. But I ended up quitting that job. And when I quit that job to create TransTech, for me, what the lesson was to teach my community to sort of learn how to ignore certain markers that don't reflect your true value. And sometimes you have to take over the narrative and of what your value is. I had to go through a space of being on food stamps. I had to go through a place of like not, you know, being broke and being very, very broke, as many, many entrepreneurs can really talk to you about. But that's about when you know you have an internal value that does not currently reflect your current state or the current scoreboard. But to know that you need to just do the work to be able to build the resources and access and relationship and networks so that you can deliver and show people the value that you have, I needed to model that. So I modeled that from a place of being in the negative to being now in far in the positive. Very, very far in the
box. It's interesting to me how many resonances there are in your many different jobs and lives. I want to play you this clip from an NBC interview you did back in 2018. And you were calling out the problems in Hollywood in terms of casting trans characters.
Oftentimes with casting directors and directors that I've spoken with, myself and many other trans actors have been denied the opportunity because they tell us that we don't look trans enough.
and that the audiences won't get it. They'll be confused. And what's terribly painful and insidious about doing that is that what they're trying to say is, as the movie's going along and as the audience is watching, we don't want them to forget that this is, there's a woman underneath there, or there's a man underneath there. And actually, that's the point. We want you to forget.
This feels very resonant to me with what you're talking about in terms of knowing who you are and knowing your worth and other people not getting that. How do you push back on this narrative of other people trying to define who you are?
I mean, you know, again, I personally just live by a certain concept of understanding intrinsic value. And it's something that I've developed this thing called my personal PhD. It's like mypersonalphd.com. And it's a basically like the blueprint that I'm giving folks, a free webinar where they kind of learn how to operate from the similar space that I operate from. And it's really with, you know, I use this sort of acronym SILC, S-I-L-C, and it really stands for having a spiritual foundation. I don't care what it is. So don't argue with me on what, I don't want to argue spirituality with me. Do what you want to do, but just make sure you have a spiritual foundation. Make sure that you understand intrinsic value, yours and everyone else's. When you understand that, you understand that there is no comparison. It's not Pepsi and Coke. We can't continue to compare ourselves where there is no comparison, and that every life has their own intrinsic value. And then understanding life condition, and when you're vibrating, when your life condition is vibrating at its highest or at its lowest, and what to do about that, and how to have more control over that. And then the C standing for curriculum, curating your own curriculum. You don't need a degree. I'm trying to teach you how to have a doctorate level understanding of who you are and what your value is.
In that light, let me read you something that Janet Mock said. Janet Mock is an executive producer and director on Pose, and a trans woman of color as well. And during last week's season premiere, Janet gave a very fiery speech with a lot of criticism for Hollywood. Some of what she said about the ending of Pose. Janet said, "It's a show, but it means so much to everyone to ensure that we enable Black and brown trans women to make it, because that sounds good. It makes you comfortable to talk like that, because then I don't scare you into facing the effing truth. You all have stomped on us." And Mock then yelled, "F Hollywood," complained about the rates of pay and how the quality of writing for the show suffered when it was left up to white male writers on the team. What was your reaction to Janet's comment?
You know, I just couldn't do anything but sit there and listen. What I know is that Hollywood tries to create exceptions. And when they do that, you know, and when we are often sometimes tokenized, they want to sort of like virtue signal to the rest of this industry that, see, look, we're doing the right things. But many times folks don't know what the real process or looks like, what diversifying things actually look like, what the experience is like. And all I could do was sit there and listen, because I don't know what it's like for Janet Mock. I'm not her. I don't know what it's like to walk in her shoes. I'm a Black trans woman, and I can relate, but I haven't accessed yet her level of access of, you know, I am an executive producer myself. I've executive produced a web series that had 4 daytime Emmy nominations. You know, I've executive produced some things right now that I'm doing, but not working on this level of collaboration with networks and understanding that, you know, even on my end as an actor, I had to speak up in certain ways in order to diversify the hair and makeup trailer, because we were doing a Black and brown show that had no Black and brown makeup artists and hairstylists when I first entered there. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's an experience all the way around. When you have, you know, all these men who are used to dominating the industry, and now we're bringing in female directors and producers and, you know, all this stuff. And so we're all learning on a set. When we say we want a certain thing,
the
process is a little different once it's right there in front of you. So
right.
For me, all I could do was just listen and learn from Janet Mock as I try to continue to do.
As we have been listening and learning from you, Angelica Ross, she plays Candy on the FX TV series Pose, also founder and CEO of Trans Tech, that provides education and support for transgender people seeking to enter the tech field. Today's producer was Haley Blassingame. Barb Anguiano produces our podcast. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Celeste Headley. This is 1A.